Well, weekends are always more interesting, informative, even exciting, because there's Monitor. I'm Jack Haskell, and in just about 3 minutes, Diane Carroll, singer, actress, and loving daughter, tells us why her father is, quote, a very special human being.
Sally used to carry my books to school. Sally was a good old girl. She helped me with my homework because I was a fool. Sally was a good old girl. If I wanted a kiss or a little bit of sweet, she was always willing to do her best to please. The girls make to love and not to tease. Sally was a good old girl. Sally was a good old girl. Sally was a good old girl. No matter what the regrets, she gave me her best. Sally was a good old girl. Now her folks were poor and she helped what she could. Sally was a good old girl. She was the hardest working girl in the neighborhood. Sally was a good old girl. She walked up and down the street all day, selling neckties to the ones who'd pay. If you didn't have the money, she would give them away. Sally was a good old girl. Well, Sally was a flower child. Man, oh man, she was wild. No matter what the regrets, she'd give you her best. Sally was a good old girl. She was the favorite with all of the men. Sally was a good old girl, and all of the other girls despised to them. Sally was a good old girl. Did you believe me that Sally never minded, she never cared? She kept on working and doing her share. She wound up married to a millionaire. Sally was a good old girl. Well, Sally was a good old girl. Sally was a good old girl. Yes, no matter what the regret, she give you her best. Sally was a good old girl. Sally was a good old girl. Sally was a good old girl.
And that testimonial to Sally from Trini Lopez. Since the baseball season's almost here, perhaps you remember the old takers to evers to chance double play weapon of the old Chicago Cubs. Well, that's the way Diane Carroll's career is going these days. The glamorous singer and actress first bloomed on Broadway, then did a lot of TV, then on to Hollywood and stardom in films. Now she's back to TV as the star of her own proposed series, Miss Julie, for NBC. Diane, presuming the series becomes an actual fact, you'll be the first female Negro to star in your own series on television. Don't you agree this is a significant of changing times?
It is significant in that this is a product of our times, what we are living through at the moment. The fact that it is considered and then the pilot made for deeper consideration, also the money that is involved to look at such an idea, is most certainly 1968. It's not any other time in my life or in yours, Jack. And yes, I'm very happy for many reasons. I hate to constantly harp on the youth, but I think that is the most important effect that anything we do has. It is upon the minds of the young people. And for young black people to sit and watch television, representatives of themselves are necessary,
right,
for them to have dignity or any self-esteem at all. Representatives in all areas, bad guys, good guys, pretty girls, ugly girls, good politicians, bad politicians, just human beings,
right,
is very necessary for them. If our children and I am now referring to both black and white children, see no representatives of black people in front of them. They don't know how to relate to each other, and they don't know how to relate to themselves. So I am very pleased that Julie has come about in my life, and if it happens, that I will be able to say that I had something to do with this turning point in our lives. If I were not a Negro girl, I'd still be very excited, but also from the point of view that I am a Negro girl.
I would certainly think you would be
yes.
excited.
Right. But this adds a special kind of texture to it for me.
I read an article about how proud you are of your entire family, but most particularly of your father. Can you tell us something about him?
Well, my father is a very special kind of human being. A few years ago, I was opening here in New York at the Americana. And Jimmy Breslin was going to do an article. And he came over to my hotel, and he spent a few hours, and he went upstairs with me to the suite, and he walked around, and he said, "Where are they?" And I said, "Who?" And he said, "The members of your family." I have just done a column.
Breslin always has a wonderful way of cutting through everything to get right to the point.
Down to the nitty-gritty. I said, "They're not here. My mother is probably at work, and my father most certainly is at work. And my sister's in school." He said, "Well, where are the aunts and the cousins and the uncles?" And I said, "None of them are here. My parents will probably not be here tonight, because we have all come to the conclusion that my nerves and their nerves are too many nerves on one night, so they come after the opening." And he said, "How do they feel about that?" I said, "Whatever is best for me seems to be my parents' primary concern." And he said, "I'd like to talk to your dad. What is your dad doing?" I said, "Well, you know, he got up at 5 o'clock this morning, and he's probably been on a train all day. But call and find out when it would be best to..." He said, "Does that bother you?" I said, "Not at all." And he said, "What do you have to do with your dad's financial situation?" I said, "I'm very proud to tell you my father is such a man and has such ego that I have nothing to do with the situation. As a matter of fact, I've read several times that I bought them their home in Westchester County, which is absolutely untrue. My father would never have that. And once in a while, I'll give them an expensive gift. But he even looks at that with a little, he doesn't want it to be too outlandish, because his ego wants to do the lovely things for his wife, not me." So he called, and he couldn't get over the fact that his daughter was opening that night for X thousand dollars. My father was getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning for less than $100, or a hundred and something dollars. And he said, "How did you decide to do that?" And he said, "That's Diane's life. You know, that doesn't have anything to do with my life. We're very proud of her, and we respect her work." But, and
well, you pointed that out in that article, I noticed in several places.
Yes, I think that I'm very proud of them, quite frankly, for being that way.
Our monitor guest these past few moments, singer and actress Diane Carroll. To give you an idea why critics rave over her Broadway, TV, and supper club appearances, listen to the way she sings "World Without Love."
"It's amazing the faces I see. There is not one soul I have known. In the midst of a crowd all around, I can't help but know I'm alone. What is life without someone to share what you're living for? I need someone who will love me and want me and need me only. And I can't find a reason to live in a world without myself. Who am I? Through the wall of despair.
Trainer whose horses have won millions of dollars, but none have ever won the Kentucky Derby. But wait till this year. The whole story from Joe Garagiola next, so stay tuned on the Monitor Beacon. Monitor Sports with Joe Garagiola.
You'd have to figure that a guy like Eddie Neloy wouldn't have too many questions about horse racing. If he said that he had all the answers, how could you argue with him? Last year, horses trained by Neloy won more than $1.25 million. The year before, he won almost twice that much. A lot of that money was won by the great Buck Passer, third leading money winner of all time. But Eddie confesses to being puzzled about one thing, and I've got to admit that his question is a dandy. He says, "There's one thing I've never been able to figure out. Man keeps getting faster and faster with each generation, constantly setting new records. But horses don't. It's an interesting thought. Why do human records keep getting broken and horse records remain the same? Conditions are better today for both men and horses. Doctors and vets are both better informed. It's funny, but the one difference seems to be that man knows what a record is and gets inspiration from trying to beat it. A horse doesn't." The horse in Eddie's barn right now is a big guy named Vitriolic. In 1967, he was named the best two-year-old of the year. Last month, Vitriolic got sick just before the Flamingo Stakes at Hialeah and was withdrawn. Neloy says that whatever's wrong isn't too serious, and he expects the horse to be sound in May. Translation, in time for the Kentucky Derby. Neloy has never won a Derby, and he wants one very badly. There's no question that he hopes Vitriolic will take care of that for him. This is Joe Garagiola for Monitor Sports.
Always the different story in sports from Joe Garagiola. Every weekday on Monitor, weekend on Monitor, and weekdays on NBC Radio. A new one from the Enoch-like singers. Monitor hears the comments of U.S. Marines under siege at Khe Sanh in just 30 seconds.
Mm-hmm. driving gets monotonous, you can get the driving drowsies. Don't take extra chances. Pull over and fight back with No-Doze. No-Doze has the strongest stimulant you can buy without a prescription. And it's not habit-forming. No-Doze. No car should be without it.
For more than 2 months, U.S. Marines at Khe Sanh have withstood enemy rocket, artillery, and mortar bombardment. Today, despite bad weather, the heavy shelling continued. For the thoughts, hopes, fears, comments of our fighting men under siege, listen as they talk with Jack Russell, NBC News, Khe Sanh.
What's your name?
Jen McDonald.
And where are you from?
Oakland, California.
How long have you been up at Khe Sanh now?
About a month and a week.
Are you taking this constant shelling up here?
Oh, I'm scared. That's how I feel about it. I'm scared. I like to go home.
Does it get any better or does it get worse?
Oh, it's getting a little better. Better than what it was when I first got here. It was real bad when I first got here, but it's getting much better now.
You're right here on the line. Do you still think the enemy might attack Khe Sanh with a ground attack?
Well, it's possible, but I don't think they will. I think they've been beat out there already. I think they've been beat to death with bombs and everything, and with all mortars and jazz, I don't think they got the men to back it up now.
Do you think they'll eventually pull out of here?
Not pull out altogether, no. I don't think they'll pull out altogether. I think they'll leave some people here to harass us and so on.
How much longer do you have to spend at Khe Sanh?
I got about 4.5 more months to go. I came in short.
Anxious to get out.
That's it.
Thank you. What's your name?
PFC Charles S. Foster.
And where are you from?
Monroe, Michigan.
How long have you been at Khe Sanh now?
Almost a year.
You've been here before it happened and then after the enemy began to hit this place?
Yes, I have.
How are you taking it up here now? What are your feelings?
Well, I feel that all the guys need all the mail they can get to help them along in this crisis here. And I feel sorry when I leave for the guys that have to stay over here to help fight this war.
How many more days do you have to spend here now?
I have about 28 days till my 12 and 20. Now I'll spend about 10 days in Pubai waiting for my orders to go home.
What's the worst part about Khe Sanh, staying at Khe Sanh, fighting at Khe Sanh?
The worst part of it is not knowing when or where they're going to hit, not being sure when a rocket barrage or something like that will be coming in.
Can come almost any time.
Any time. Sometimes at night. Never know when.
What do you think the enemy is going to do next?
Well, myself, I doubt they're going to try to attack Khe Sanh. Not in a big human way, because guys are pretty mad at all the shelling and all the buddies they've lost. They won't take Khe Sanh.
You don't even think they'll try?
I doubt they'll try.
Thank you. Jack Russell, NBC News, reporting for Monitor from Khe Sanh.
Spanning the continent on NBC Radio. In Northwest Florida, hear us on WCOA Pensacola, serving the Golden Sun coast of Florida. Wherever you're listening, a brief station break next, then Monitor continues. This is Jack Haskell.
Don't go away, there's more to come, more to interest everyone. Just stay tuned, we'll be back soon.
Monitor New York, your weekend sound on WNBC New York. Angie Dickinson, Ephraim Zimbalist Jr., A Fever in the Blood, Watch it on the Sunday Film Festival tonight at 11:30.
A murder trail becomes a political struggle for three men, a judge, a district attorney, and a U.S. senator. Watch A Fever in the Blood tonight at 11:30 on Channel 4. The time now is 8:30 as Monitor continues.
Time now for more good Monitor music, and the present assignment goes to Bob Shane singing Honey.
See the tree, how big it's grown, but friend, it hasn't been too long, it wasn't big. I laughed at her and she got mad, the first day that she planted it was just a twig. Then the first snow came and she ran out to brush the snow away so it wouldn't die. Came running in, all excited, slipped and almost hurt herself, and I laughed till I cried. She was always young at heart, kind of dumb and kind of smart, and I loved her so. I surprised her with a puppy, kept me up all Christmas Eve 2 years ago. And it would sure embarrass her when I came in from working late, 'cause I would know that she'd been sitting there and crying over some sad and silly late, late show. And honey, I miss you, and I'm being good. I'd love to be with you if only I could. She wrecked the car and she was sad and so afraid that I'd be mad, but what the heck. Though I pretended hard to be, I guess you could say she saw through me and hug my neck. I came home unexpectedly and caught her crying needlessly in the middle of the day. It was in the early spring when flowers bloomed and robins sing, she went away. Honey, I miss you, and I'm being good. I'd love to be with you if only I could. Yes, one day while I wasn't home, while she was there and all alone, the angels came. Now all I have is memories of honey, and I wake up nights and call her name. Life's an empty stage where honey lived and honey played and love grew up. A small cloud passes overhead and cries down on the flower bed that honey loved. And see the tree, how big it's grown, but friend, it hasn't been too long, it wasn't big.
Next on Monitor, the happy sound of the Baja Marimba Band doing tricks with the clock and taking us back to Sunday morning.
Thank you. it's for love his poor heart yearns. 'Cause it's spring and girls all sing.
And no matter what the season, always make it a Monitor weekend at home or on the road. Because Monitor makes the weekend. Jack Haskell here with Sport of Speed, the latest word on auto racing coming up later this half hour. A prize-winning diver and underwater photographer tells Monitor why he feels men of the future will live in the sea, equipped with artificial gills. Hear the whole story right after Raymond Lefevre's orchestra does some soul coaxing. Countless articles recently have dealt with man's future, not on Earth, not in space, but underwater. Marine biologists point to the sea as a fantastic source for food and byproducts. But how can man live underwater for any practical length of time? Well, surprising as it may sound, experiments on artificial gills and so-called liquid breathing offer a dramatic answer to that question. A prize-winning professional diver and underwater photographer, Stanton Waterman of Princeton, New Jersey, looks at both his past adventures and man's potential future underwater as he talks with Monitor reporter Lee Klein.
What is the best water fairly close to the United States?
Probably the Bahamas and Cozumel. This is the Yucatan Peninsula area. Have about as fine diving as you'll find in our hemisphere.
Have you ever found any treasure from sunken ships?
I have indeed. Not in the light in which you're thinking. Not Spanish doubloons. In 59, I filmed an underwater archaeological expedition in the Aegean, and we found the wreck of a ship that sank 1300 B.C. This is 1300 years before Christ's time. And we raised part of its cargo of copper and bronze weapons and tools. Well, to my way of thinking, this is treasure in every sense of the word, because it's worth more than you could put a value on to archaeologists, you see. This was the first Bronze Age shipwreck that had ever been found. possibly a Phoenician ship. Incredibly ancient.
Now, I have one more question, and this deals in the future. Some of the undersea researchers and divers have speculated that perhaps one day man will be able to insert in his body an oxygen supply, like putting a capsule under his armpit, that will allow him to stay underwater for days, weeks, even months, and eventually live under the water. Does this intrigue you, or do you poo-poo it?
Oh, no. I think a person would be fatuous to poo-poo almost anything, technology being what it is. What you're speaking about is the conjecture that artificial gills will be developed, enabling man to take oxygen directly from the water and into his bloodstream and thus live for long periods of time. Well, I just heard at the last underwater conference on the West Coast that this liquid breathing, as it's called, is actually being experimented with in Buffalo, New York, with human beings. And dogs, and this is a fairly high order of mammal, have been successfully breathing water directly into their lungs under pressure and in a isotonic, a salt solution, and taking the oxygen from the water and sustaining life for a period of a half an hour and more, and then coming back successfully from the experiment. Well, these are the first faltering wing beats of the Wright brothers at Kitty Hawk, you know, figuratively speaking. It seems way out and far-fetched now, but I'm absolutely certain that as our need to move into this remaining three-quarters of the planet, which we must to sustain and survive, as this need increases, we're going to finally become sea creatures and live for periods of days, months, and years, perhaps, coming back and forth from one environment to the other.
That's quite a thing to contemplate.
It is indeed. But,
out of the sea, into the land, into the air, into the space, but back into the sea.
Man returning to the milieu from which he came. It is quite a challenge.
Well, thank you very much. We've been talking to Stanton Waterman from Princeton, New Jersey, who is an underwater diver and underwater photographer.
Say, while you're slipping out of your artificial gills and diving suit, why not enjoy the voice of Nancy Sinatra?
I'm not gonna say everything is okay, 'cause okay is not the way that I feel. I'm not gonna be any fool's Christmas tree. Let them hang it on me that aren't real. I'm not gonna take second best. I've got no use for the rest. World, you better hear what I say. 'Cause for me, true love could be. Giving in to a smile or a grin on a face I might never see again. I'm not gonna fly in some big bony sky on a lie that I know just can't win. And I'm not gonna take second best. I've got no use for the rest. The world, you better hear what I say. 'Cause for me,
Chris Economaki with all the latest news, views, and results in auto racing, Sport of Speed, coming up less than 4 minutes away on the Monitor Beacon.
Monitor presents Sport of Speed. It's time for your weekend checkpoint with Chris Economaki with action from the world of auto racing. Brought to you by the refiners of world-famous Pennsylvania-grade crude oils. Chris will be along in a moment, but first, this message. Is your car's engine running like something doesn't fit? Better change to a brand of Pennsylvania-grade crude motor oil. It's a proven fact that crude oil from wells in the Pennsylvania region produces oils of superior lubricity, or oiliness. Because they have a unique molecular structure, these famous oils last longer, make your car's engine run smoother. Follow the lead of sports car fans. For the good of your engine, insist on Pennsylvania-grade crude motor oils. And if you are a sports car fan, get this. The Pennsylvania-grade Crude Oil Association again this year is repeating its offer of rally kits. Each kit has six big checkpoint signs, windshield stickers numbered 1 through 100, and a pad of 120 sanctioned rally scoring slips. To get a rally kit for your club, just send $1 to Checkpoint, Box 96, Oil City, Pennsylvania. Now, here's Chris Economaki.
Thank you, Mel. David Pearson's luck certainly has changed for the better. Last week at Bristol, Tennessee, he broke a 51-week wind famine, and today's Richmond 250 for the late models, he scored a one-lap victory over Charlie Glotzbach on the Virginia State Fairgrounds half-mile track. Pearson almost didn't make the race, damaging his 68 Ford Torino in practice. 2 hours of feverish work by the Holman and Moody crew got the car repaired with moments to spare, and the 125-miler got underway. Before 25 miles had unfolded, Pearson had struck a slower car and spun through a flimsy wooden fence. He restarted and dueled Richard Petty until Petty went out and then went on to victory. Petty's Plymouth suffered one of its rare malfunctions, breaking a crankshaft while leading. Glotzbach's second place came at the wheel of Cottineau in 67 Dodge Charger and marked Charge and Charlie's first dirt track start in 4 years. 13 laps off the pace was Elmo Langley's 66 Ford in third, with Neil Castles in the same lap taking fourth in his 67 Olds. A turnaway crowd attended the race, which was worth $2,300 to Pearson, who in his last six Richmond starts has now won five times and finished second twice. At Reading, Pennsylvania today, the modified stock car season got underway on the half-mile dirt track with Bobby Gearhart, the winner of the feature, in the AT Consoli car, which carried Dick Tobias to two-track championships. Tobias was fifth today in his new car. Behind Gearhart were Al Tasnady, Whip Mulligan, and Freddie Adam. Then came Tobias. Former NASCAR champion Rene Charland found the competition pretty rugged and was unable to crack the top 10. The sprint cars of the United States Auto Club take over the Reading track next Sunday in their Eastern opener. Yesterday's Sebring Endurance race saw the Porsche factory survive two engine failures and then place their remaining two factory 907s in the two top spots in this country's oldest endurance race. Porsche now leads for the International Championship of Makes with 18 points to Alfa Romeo's 2 and Chevrolet's 1. The amazing performance of the Chevrolet Camaros in winning the Trans-American Sedan division of the race with a third and fourth overall placing tightened the domestic standings. Chevrolet now leads 15-10 for Ford and 2 for American Motors. The sixth place finish by a Corvette boosted Chevrolet's lead for the International Grand Touring Cup to 18 points, with Porsche close behind with 12 tallies. The accident, in which one of the three girl drivers in the 12-hour race was involved, and eventually resulted in the leading Ford GT40 going out of the race, has led to cries on the part of some international drivers that girl participants be banned in future events. This is Chris Economaki for Monitor Sports.
Sport of Speed with Chris Economaki is brought to you twice each weekend by the many famous brands of Pennsylvania-grade crude oil. For the lasting good of your engine, insist on a Pennsylvania motor oil. This is Mel Allen for Monitor Sports.
Be sure to hear Monitor's other auto racing feature, World of Wheels, every Saturday and Sunday evening.
Well,
Well, I've been on the road for such a long, long time. I go where it leads me, this old bum of mine. Since you said goodbye, I've almost lost my mind. And all I do is follow the old line. Old line. Stand. Lots of happy people who won't understand how I got the sorrow in the eyes of mine. Why must follow that old line? Old line. Probably spend the night on some old barroom floor. Let the wine cloud my mind, so I can't see your face anymore. Maybe somewhere down the line I'll stop and then find someone who wants me, and I'll love again. When I do, she'll never leave me.
Was Dino following the old yellow line on monitor.
You're pounding down the highway at the legal limit. At first it's fun. Then it's routine. Finally, it's monotonous. And that's when the driving drowsies strike. Don't take extra chances. Pull over and fight back with no-doze. No-doze has the strongest stimulant you can buy without a prescription, and it's not habit-forming. No-doze. No car should be without it.
Richard's Flugel Nights and a song that has this spirit of spring in its title, Feeling Good. Well, it's been an eventful week, not the least of which has been a very special donation made to the University of California. Jack Benny turned over to the school a complete collection of memorabilia chronicling his 50 years in show business. Said the university's chancellor, "We greatly appreciate this donation." Said Benny, "Donation? I thought I was selling this stuff." Stay tuned for the news. This is Jack Haskell.
Don't go away, there's more to come. More to interest everyone. Just stay tuned, we'll be back soon.
That good John Briggs sherry wine, exported to the colonies for the first time. John Briggs makes and bottles it in Jerez, Spain, where the hot sun warms the wine casks, and John Briggs winemasters use the famous Solera system of aging the smooth sherries, blending them gently with younger aged wines now and then to create that incredible smoothness. In this bottle of John Briggs Fino carries the date Solera 1908. I like the Fino, very pale and dry. The ladies might like the softer and sweeter John Briggs Cream Sherry Solera 1914. A terrible year for people, great year for John Briggs Sherry. Those Monsieur Henri wine people, you know, the importers of fine wines from all over the world, are bringing John Briggs Sherry to America. Amazing how you see their label wherever a fine wine pops up. John Briggs Fine Sherry Wines, Solera Aged Wines, imported by Monsieur Henri Wines Limited, New York, New York, naturally.
Monitor New York, your weekend sound on WNBC New York.